Okay, so welcome to another deep dive. And today we're going to be looking at this case, Sean Labo v. State of Texas. It's really interesting because it kind of gets at this tension between our free speech rights, you know, the First Amendment, and the need to protect people from digital harassment. And it's a Texas Court of Appeals decision, and we've got it right here. And it really does bring up some key points about where that line is.
Yeah, absolutely. And for listeners, what's really fascinating is that this case actually spans two separate convictions.
Oh.
So we're looking at a felony assault conviction that goes all the way back to 2002, and then a harassment conviction that's more recent, from 2015. So we're going to be dealing with both a physical act and then, you know, the impact of these, like, repeated electronic communications. And it really kind of shows how the law is trying to catch up, you know, with harm in both the physical world, but also in this digital world that we live in.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like our mission for this deep dive is to kind of get a handle on those legal principles that are at play here. So we want to understand how the Texas courts decided whether or not this electronic harassment law was even constitutional, especially when that free speech argument comes up. And then, you know, we're also going to look at how they looked at this idea of causation in the assault case, which, you know, that sounds like it's probably a little bit more complicated than we might think at first.
For sure. It can get a little tricky.
Okay. So I guess let's start with the actual details of these convictions. Like, what actually happened here?
Well, let's first rewind all the way back to 2002. So back then, Sean Labo was convicted of a felony assault, and this was for shoving a 70-year-old man, a guy named Richard Lewinsman.
Okay.
And this shove, unfortunately, caused a really serious shoulder injury. Lewinsman ended up needing surgery. And I think this is where things get really interesting for those of you who want to kind of understand how the law works, because this is where this Texas law comes into play, specifically Section 6.04A, which is called the Concurrent Causation Doctrine.
Okay, so even though this man already had some issues with his shoulder, the court still said that Lebo's actions were a cause of the injuries. All right.
Right, exactly. So even though Lewinsman had this pre-existing condition with his shoulder, the court decided that Lebo's shove was still what we call a but-for cause of the injury.
A but-for cause.
Yeah, think of it this way. But for Lebo pushing him, would Lewinsman have needed that surgery, you know, right then? And the answer is no, he wouldn't have. So Lebo's shove was considered a cause, like it contributed to the injury. And that's why he ended up getting 10 years of probation for this.
Wow, okay, so that's heavy stuff.
Yeah.
So then let's move on to this 2015 harassment thing.
Right. So fast forward more than 10 years to 2015, and Lebo is in trouble with the law again. This time, it's for harassment. The court records show that he sent, get this, over 40 harassing emails to a detective, Jason Lehman, over a period of 3 years.
Over 3 years, wow.
Yeah, and get this, Detective Lehman had actually been involved in an earlier investigation that involved Lebo. So these emails, they accused Lehman of all sorts of misconduct, and Lebo was even threatening him with legal action.
So it sounds kind of personal.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe. And this is what got him in trouble under Texas law, specifically Section 42.07A7. This section deals with electronic harassment. And because of these emails, he was found guilty and sentenced to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine.
Wow. But didn't he say, like, didn't he try to argue that that law was, like, against his rights, like free speech and stuff?
Yes, exactly. He claimed that this very law, Section 42.07, that he was convicted under, was actually unconstitutional, that it violated his right to free speech. So that sets the stage for, you know, how the court's going to analyze all of this.
Yeah, okay. So let's get into how the court looked at these arguments. So starting with that harassment conviction, what was Labo's argument exactly?
Okay, so his main argument against that harassment conviction was that Section 42.07A7 was what we call facially unconstitutional. And for you law students out there, that basically means that he's saying the law itself, the way it's written, is just fundamentally flawed.
Oh, okay.
He claimed it was either, you know, too vague so people wouldn't even know what they could or couldn't do, or it was overbroad so it could end up punishing speech that should be protected under the First Amendment.
Okay, but the court didn't agree with him, did they?
No, they didn't.
Okay, so what was their reasoning? What made them think that this law was okay?
Well, they really focused on a few key parts of the law. First, they emphasized that this law requires what we call specific intent. So basically, the person sending those electronic messages, they have to have the specific goal of harassing, annoying, or tormenting the person on the other end.
Okay, so you can't, you know, accidentally harass someone. You have to be doing it on purpose.
Exactly. That's the key. And that idea of intent is really important because it helps separate protected speech, you know, legitimate communication, from behavior that is really just meant to be harmful.
Okay, so it's not just, you know, sending a message that bugs someone. It has to be like you're intentionally trying to cause them distress.
Right. It's targeted. It's malicious.
Gotcha. So that's one thing the court focused on. What else?
Well, second, they pointed out that this law is really focused on repeated invasions of privacy, and specifically those that happen through electronic communication. So it's not about a single incident. It has to be a pattern of behavior.
Okay, so like one annoying email might not be enough, but if you keep doing it, then it becomes a problem.
Exactly. Think about it this way. A single email that's written in the heat of the moment, you know, maybe that's still protected speech, but if someone's constantly bombarding you with unwanted messages, that's a whole other situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's like the difference between like one angry tweet and a whole campaign of like abuse online.
Exactly. It's about the pattern.
Okay. And what was the third thing the court looked at?
The third key point is that the conduct, whatever the person is doing, has to be reasonably likely to cause emotional distress.
Reasonably likely. So not just like I felt a little bad, but like a normal person would feel distressed by this.
Right, right. It brings in this idea of an objective standard. So it's not just about whether the person who received the messages felt harassed. It's about whether a reasonable person in that situation would also feel harassed.
Okay, that makes sense. So when you put those three things together, the intent, the repetition, and the likelihood of distress, it seems like the court is basically saying that this law isn't about like regular speech or debate.
That's right. They see it as more about stopping harmful conduct, conduct that just happens to use communication as its weapon.
Okay. And you know, I'm remembering now that Justice Rebecca Martinez, she actually had a really strong statement about this in the court's opinion.
Oh, right. About how communication itself can be used to like really invade someone's privacy in a way that's just unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think she even used the phrase, let me see, in an essentially intolerable manner.
Yes, exactly. That, quote, communicative conduct invades privacy interests in an essentially intolerable manner. I mean, that really gets to the core of what they were thinking.
Yeah.
They're saying that when you're using electronic communication to intentionally and repeatedly harass someone, and it's likely to cause them real emotional distress, well, then you've lost that First Amendment protection because you're not just expressing yourself, you're actually causing harm.
Right. It's like a form of like digital assault almost.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Okay, and they also brought up a case from the past to support their decision, right? Yeah. It was called Scott v. State, I think.
Yeah, Scott v. State. That case was really important because it had already upheld similar laws. It showed that courts have been distinguishing between protected speech and harmful conduct for a while now. And the court, in Labo's case, leaned on that precedent. They said, look, the state has a right, even a duty, to protect its citizens from this kind of intrusive, damaging behavior.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they're not breaking new ground here. They're following a pattern that's already been established.
Right.
Okay. And you know, there was another interesting thing about this. The way Lebo handled his case, he didn't actually bring up this whole constitutional challenge right away, did he?
No, you're right. He actually waited until after the jury had already decided he was guilty. Yeah, so he brought it up after the verdict. But the Court of Appeals was still able to consider it, to look at the argument, because the trial judge still had what we call jurisdiction. So basically, he still had the power to change things, to potentially overturn the conviction if he felt like it was necessary. So even though Labo didn't bring it up at the ideal time, the court still listened to what he had to say.
Okay, so that clears up that whole harassment conviction and how the court decided it.
Yeah.
But what about Labo's attempt to, like, go back and challenge that 2002 assault conviction?
Right, right. So with the assault case, his efforts to have that conviction vacated, basically thrown out, those are mostly unsuccessful. He tried to argue that the prosecutors had acted improperly and that his lawyer hadn't done a good enough job defending him.
Okay.
But the Court of Appeals basically said, look, you've already brought up these issues before in earlier appeals and we've already dealt with them. So they weren't going to go back and rehash everything again all these years later.
Okay, so they kind of said, look, that ship has sailed. We're not going back to that.
Exactly. They felt that the legal process had run its course for that particular case. But it's still important to remember that concept of but-for causation in the assault case, you know, from Section 6.04a. That's a really key legal principle.
Right, right. We talked about that before. how even though the victim already had some shoulder problems, Lebo's actions still contributed to the injury.
Right. And that idea of but-for causation, it's all about figuring out who is criminally responsible. So in Lebo's assault case, even though Lewinsman had that pre-existing shoulder issue, the court said that if Lebo hadn't shoved him, he wouldn't have needed surgery at that specific moment. So basically, his actions were a cause of the harm, even if other factors were also involved.
So the law recognizes that things aren't always black and white, right? There can be multiple causes for an injury, but if someone's actions are a significant part of the problem, they can still be held responsible.
Exactly. It's not about being the only cause, but a necessary cause. That's an important distinction.
Okay, so we've talked about both convictions, the arguments that were made, and how the court analyzed everything. What are the big takeaways here? Like, what are the legal tests or principles that really stand out from this case?
Well, for electronic harassment, under that section 42.07A7, those three elements are crucial. You need specific intent to harass, annoy, or torment. You need repeated electronic communications. And that conduct has to be reasonably likely to invade the victim's privacy and cause them distress.
Okay, so it's not just about feeling annoyed. It has to be serious and intentional.
Exactly. And for the assault case under section 22.04, the big takeaway is that but-for causation standard, meaning even if there were other factors involved, if the defendant's action was a big part of causing the harm, they can be held liable.
Okay, that makes sense. And, you know, as we're talking about this, it makes me think about the bigger picture. Like, you know, we live in this digital age where communication is changing all the time. And it seems like this case really reinforces the idea that free speech isn't absolute.
Right. It has its limits.
Yeah, like you can't just hide behind the First Amendment if you're using communication to intentionally harm someone.
Exactly. And that's a really important distinction.
And it brings up a really big question. Where exactly is the line between, you know, saying something harsh or criticizing someone and actually crossing over into harassment? Especially online, that line can feel really blurry.
Oh, absolutely. And the court in this case, they really stress the importance of intent and harm. If someone is communicating with the specific goal of repeatedly tormenting someone else, and if it's likely to cause them significant distress, then the First Amendment might not protect them. It's about understanding the difference between expressing yourself, even if it's unpopular, and using communication as a weapon to hurt someone.
And I think for law students especially, this is something really important to think about, because you're going to be entering a legal world where so much is happening online. And understanding these fine lines is going to be crucial.
Yeah.
You're going to have to balance protecting free speech with protecting people from harm. And knowing when that line is crossed is going to be really important.
Absolutely. You know, technology is constantly changing, and new ways of communicating are popping up all the time. So this case and the principles that came out of it, they're a really good starting point for figuring out how to handle these difficult situations.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about.
It is.
So, wow, this has been a really interesting look at Sean Lebeau v. State of Texas. It really shows just how complex things can get when we're trying to balance our rights with the need to protect people from harm, both physical and emotional. And especially in this digital world that we live in now, it's more important than ever to understand these issues.
I completely agree. The ways we communicate may change, but these basic legal principles, the idea of intent, of causing harm, those things are always going to be important when we're trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah. So to wrap things up, I want to leave you with this. Think about what we learned from this Lebo case, especially about intent and what makes an invasion of privacy intolerable. And now think about how those ideas might apply to new forms of communication, things that weren't even around back in 2015. Like, how do we define and address harassment online while we're still protecting free speech? It's a challenge, but it's one that you'll need to understand as you move forward in your legal careers.
It is. And it's something that we're all going to have to continue thinking about and adapting to as the world keeps changing around us.
That's a great point. Well, thanks for joining me for another deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time.